powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
The Seahawks have some big decisions to make late April. Joining us now, ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Jordan, how's it going?
It's great. Thank you all for having me.
We're happy to have you on here. The Seahawks are in a really interesting spot where they've got like an older quarterback with Geno, who they're clearly confident in, but everyone's wondering if they're going to be taking a quarterback in the first round. Both Bump and I think that's probably not going to be happening. But tell me a bit about this quarterback class after you get past the top three or four. I can't tell where Bo Nix and Michael Penix are going to fall.
Yeah, it just depends on who you ask, honestly, with this quarterback class. And everybody knows about Caleb Williams of USC, Drake May of North Carolina, and then also JT Daniels of LSU. But this second tier is really, really interesting, talking about J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, Bo Nix of Oregon, who you just mentioned, and also Michael Penix Jr. of Washington. And depending on who you ask, there's a different range of where those quarterbacks are projected to go right now with McCarthy. Some people are saying that he can go inside the top five, while there are some others that feel more comfortable with him in the mid to late first round. Bo Nix is in a similar situation of where there's some people that are comfortable taking him in the first round, while there's others that think he's a day two guy, and Penix is in that same realm as well. And then after that, you're getting into guys like Spencer Rattler of South Carolina, who had a very good pro day. I was there in attendance. I thought he threw the ball very well. Michael Pratt of Tulane, and then also Jordan Travis of Florida State.
Jordan, I've worked for the Pac-12 Network. I've followed Bo Nix and Michael Penix, so I know them pretty well. So obviously I'm a bit biased here, but I look at Michael Penix and what he did in college and how he performed at the combine when it comes to throwing the football, and it just baffles me that he's not moving up on a lot of people's draft board. How much does the injury history have to do with that, or do you feel like the top-tier quarterbacks who are considered top-tier quarterbacks are that much better than Michael Penix?
It's a combination of those two variables, honestly, with the injury situation. Four season-ending injuries in as many seasons prior to his time at Washington. But I will say this. We have to give him credit for staying healthy over the course of the past two seasons and also playing very well. So depending on who you ask, once again, with the medical situation with Michael Penix, that is going to be something that does probably keep him off of some teams' boards, just because when you're talking about investing in such an important position, they're going to want mostly a clean injury history with those players. And then with Penix, he doesn't have that. And then also the mobility factor or lack thereof with Penix. And we saw it in the Michigan game, in the title game, of where when you force him off of the spots, he does have some troubles when he's forced to move outside of the pocket. So just an interesting stat about Penix. He's really good inside the pocket. So when his feet are set, he has a 69% completion percentage, but when he's forced to move off the spots or shuffle off the spots, it drops all the way down to 43%. So there is a pattern there as far as with his lack of mobility or when he is moved off of his original launch points. So it is the injury history and then a combination of the mobility or lack thereof with Penix of why he's not viewed in that first tier with the other guys right now.
Hey, with Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, I saw one mock that had him to Seattle at 16, but I've also seen him as high as number 5. I mean, you wrote, Jordan, that the Chargers are the most interesting team to you right there, wondering what they could do. I mean, they could take him, which seems crazy, but they could. Where does your gut tell you that Brock kind of lands?
I think it could be possible with the Chargers at 5, but I think they would feel a little bit more comfortable trading back, just because when you're talking about tight ends, and we've seen a pattern of them go very early in the draft, and it doesn't have good history as far as them getting involved in the offense very early on and having success early on in their careers. And we've seen Kyle Pitts, that's another great example of a player that his career got off to a really fast start, but he has kind of struggled of late just because they haven't been able to involve him in the offense. So just how heavily involved is Brock going to be in the offense, and do you feel comfortable taking a tight end that early? That's what it's going to come down to with him. But I look at the Chargers at 5, the Jets at 10 make a lot of sense as well, and even Cincinnati in the mid-first round as well. So there's a lot of teams that make a little bit more sense for Brock Bowers before potentially the Seahawks to consider him at 16.
Jordan, I've been fascinated with the tight end position and how it's changed over the last decade, just the things these guys are able to do. And as I watch film and I start looking at linebackers, because obviously over here in Seattle, they needed some backer help. I look at these linebackers and I'm seeing a change in their body types and what they're able to do. Do you see that when it comes to watching film on these linebackers? And also, what do you think about this linebacker class in the 2024 draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. Long gone are those days of those big, tough Mike linebackers that are just downhill, what I like to call sledgehammers, just because the game has changed. The game has evolved. It's more of a passing league now, and you have to be a versatile coverage linebacker. If you can't play in coverage, these offensive coordinators and offenses are so smart now to where they can scheme specific concepts around you to where they can take advantage of you. So what you're seeing now is defenses have adjusted to where they want lighter personnel, or lighter players in those lighter type of personnel packages, to where they don't have to take that guy off of the field. So a lot of teams are playing with mostly two linebackers. So they're playing with a Mike and a Will, or a Mike and a Sam, however you want to classify it. But what's happening now is people would prefer what's called a modern day linebacker, of where they're a little bit lighter, 230, 235 pounds, that are versatile. They can come downhill and strike, but also they can sustain and feel comfortable in pass coverage too. But this linebacker class overall, I think it's one of the more weaker linebacker classes that we have had in recent memories. The only one that I feel comfortable about going in the first round potentially is Edgerrin Cooper of Texas A&M. But there is quite a few guys that could go on day two. Junior Colson of Michigan has some fans in the league. Peyton Wilson of NC State is another name that you hear about a lot. Cedric Gray of North Carolina. And then Jeremiah Trotter Jr. of Clemson is another name that you hear about quite a bit. So there isn't that bona fide guy like we have seen in years past. There's no Roquan Smith or nobody like that in this draft class, but there is some value on day two and day three.
Hey, curious about the trenches. The Seahawks conversation all offseason has been that they need to build there. They are the one of the worst run defenses in football. They've never been like a top 10 offensive line when Pete Carroll was here. I mean, really, that's where they need a lot of focus. How would you say the depth or strength of the class is interior offensive line and at defensive line?
Well, interior offensive line, I think there's some value on day two, then especially day three as well. Now, offensive tackle, I think that's one of the stronger overall positional groups in this entire draft class. But just particularly speaking about guard and center, there's some really good centers in this draft class. Jackson Powers Johnson of Oregon is one name that you'll hear quite a bit. Graham Barton of Duke, who I have as a center. Then also Zach Frazier of West Virginia. But moving over to guard, there's a lot of either or with some of these players. And what I mean by that is there's some people that believe some of these guys can be a tackle or they can be a guard. Troy Fatanu of Washington is one name that I would have circled if I was Seahawks fans. I would feel comfortable with taking him at 16 just because I think he has that guard tackle flexibility that I think he could come in and be a day one starter. But there's a lot of other guys that you hear about in this class. Christian Haynes of UConn, Zach Spencer of Michigan, Cooper Beebe of Kansas State, just running down the list of some names that you hear about quite a bit in this guard class.
I love me some wide receiver play. And when you look at the top four receivers that I always mention in this draft, obviously you go Harrison, Neighbors, Adunze, you got Thomas as well. You know those guys are going to play in this league, but you can find some good receivers in the draft, especially late. You look at the Pittsburgh Steelers that have done a great job drafting receivers over the past years. Are there any guys that maybe the average fan doesn't know about when it comes to the wide receiver spot that you feel will make a roster and contribute early?
Yeah, this is a really strong wide receiver class. And just to give you guys a peek behind the curtain of my draft board, I have 12 day two grades for wide receivers. So that just goes to show you the depth in this wide receiver class. But two guys I think could definitely be value on day two is Ladd McConkey of Georgia. He's one that I had an opportunity to see at Georgia's Pro Day last week. I thought he looked very good there. Xavier Leggett of South Carolina is another name. And then Jalen Polk of Washington. I think he's a very underrated name that isn't getting a lot of love right now, but I think he can be a very good wide receiver too on the next level.
Sticking with wide receiver, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, obviously we know they're first rounders. How high do you think either could go? Does it start with number four, Arizona?
I actually think it could start with New England at three. Now, I think New England's still going to go quarterback, but they have a huge need for wide receiver help, and they've been bringing in some free agents. They've been retaining some of their own guys too. So I still think they go quarterback, but Arizona, I think that's probably where the receiver run does start in this draft. You could talk about Arizona at four, the Chargers at five, obviously need wide receiver help with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams both gone. The Giants at six, they're in contention to take a wide receiver too. So that four range, that's where I think the run is definitely going to start. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a name obviously is going to be considered. Malik Nabers of LSU is another name that I would throw into that first tier too. And then you already talked about Rome Odunze of Washington as well.
The process from going, obviously, from college to the NFL has been pretty consistent, I feel like, over the past 10 years. But I feel like it's changing at the same time just because of the options that these young men have when it comes to the transfer portal and NIL. Have you seen a change in the way that they are evaluated? How much does the portal and the off-the-field stuff factor in? Because obviously some guys are just good enough to where they'll take you with your flaws no matter what. You can bounce around, take money, doesn't matter. But do you see a change in the approach that these gyms have when it comes to evaluating these guys, or do you still feel like it's pretty consistent?
No, so I've been doing this, and I'm not a super veteran or anything like that, but I've been doing this professionally for about 6 years now. And I remember when I was first coming in, if a guy transferred two or even three times, everybody was trying to figure out, like, man, what's wrong with this guy? Like, what happened? Was it the coach's fault? Was it the player's fault? But now we're seeing guys transfer two, three, even four times, and it's just normal now just because of NIL and, you know, transfer portal rules and all this other stuff. So I think the transfer element has made it much harder on scouts just because you're trying to figure out the background information of what exactly happened and why these guys are jumping from place to place to place. So just that aspect of it, and then exactly what happened in the background of things, the transfer portal and the NIL has just thrown another huge variable into the scouting part of scouting all these guys.
Hey, just out of curiosity, Jordan, it doesn't have to tie to the Seahawks or Seattle in any way, but when you look at this draft, what to you is one of the most interesting storylines or fascinating topics?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think who is the second quarterback drafted? Mm. We know Caleb Williams is going to go number one overall to Chicago. I think that's a foregone conclusion now. But that second quarterback, whether it's Drake May of North Carolina or Jaden Daniels of LSU, I think that's something that's going to be really, really interesting in this draft class.
Yeah, Jaden, he's been the biggest surprise for me. No, I'm not disrespecting what he did, obviously, in LSU, but when he was at Arizona State, we just didn't see that. Is it risky just going off of 1 year and elevating him that high? Obviously, he wins a Heisman, not knocking him at all, but do you feel like it's going to transfer?
Yeah, I think so. I think the hardest part about quarterback evaluations nowadays is especially when they make the leap. And this is something that a lot of people had troubles with Joe Burrow at LSU and just trying to figure out, is this really him, or is the guy that we saw at Ohio State and prior to that magical year at LSU where he won the Heisman, is that really him? So just trying to decipher which quarterback he really is. And there's sometimes where you just have to trust things finally clicking for them. Now, that's not to say that you're always going to be right with that, but you just have to trust what he has shown you most recently. And you have to kind of take them away from their situation, just evaluate the traits that they're showing consistently on film. So I think it's going to translate with Jaden, and you just have to trust what he showed last year and trust that's really who he is.
Hey, we brought you on to talk about the draft, but we only got you for a couple more minutes, so I'm just going to go NFL. What did you make of both Russell Wilson and Justin Fields now making up that quarterback room in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it from Pittsburgh's standpoint just because, and they couldn't go into the season with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph and Mitch Trubisky all over again. I just thought that was going to be a huge disservice to them. And you have to look around at the division too. The North is really tough. I mean, you have Baltimore right there who came off being the one seed. Cleveland's going to be better next year. Deshaun hopefully will play better. And then Joe Burrow is going to be back healthy next year. So they couldn't run it back essentially with what they had at quarterback. But I love the cheaper element that they went with the quarterback position, just because if it doesn't work out, they can just start from scratch a year from now with Russell Wilson coming in on basically a 1 year deal for vet minimum. And then Justin Fields coming over for a six-round conditional pick in next year's draft. I just think it's really a low risk but high reward, depending on who wins that quarterback job.
Last one I got for you. It's crazy. We've done a few of these draft interviews, and Stacey, we have not addressed the running back position at all. That is crazy how devalued the running back is, especially in the draft, because everyone feels like they can find somebody late that they could run to the ground for 3 or 4 years and then pick up another young buck. Who are some names that you like at the RB spot?
Yeah, this is another class that I think is very interesting. I'll say that there isn't that guy. We were spoiled last year with Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. We don't have those type of players in this draft class. But this draft class is very reminiscent to what we saw in 2014. And if you remember, in 2014, there wasn't a running back drafted inside the top 50. But in the top 100, there were seven guys total drafted. So I think each team is going to be waiting around to see when that first or that second running back is picked. And then we're going to see a flurry of guys picked consecutively after that inside that top 100 range. My top two running backs right now are Jonathan Brooks of Texas, then also Trey Benson of Florida State. But there's plenty of others that I think are going to be really valuable on day two. Blake Corum of Michigan is another player that has a lot of love in the league. Braylon Allen of Wisconsin. Then also Marshawn Lloyd of USC. So it just depends on your flavor or whatever floats your boat that I like to say in this draft class. With the running back position, but I think we're going to see them fly off of the board inside of that 50 to 100 range.
He is NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed. Make sure you're reading his work at ESPN.com, especially ahead of this draft, Seahawks fans. Thanks so much, Jordan. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you, as always.
All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
This is not a Four Downs question, but today's not St. Patrick's Day, is it?
Nah, it was Sunday.
Yes, Sunday?
I think. Oh, you know what my wife said? She goes, you know what St. Patrick's Day, right? She goes, you remember what we were doing in our 20s, St. Patrick's Day? Yes, babe, I do. Going down to the water in Kirkland, bar hopping. I ain't Irish, but I was that day.
I don't do anything for St. Patrick's Day. I don't know why I was thinking about it. First down. Well, because I saw green on our show sheet, and I thought, oh, I didn't wear green today. And then I thought, I don't even think it's St. Patrick's Day. I think it just was lost on me. First down, what questions do you have about the Justin Fields trade to Pittsburgh?
I pretty much talked about it in the open, but I look at the Bears situation, and I ask, could they have been more patient with this thing? I understand wanting to get Justin Fields out of there, making sure that Caleb is comfortable, or even Jaden Daniels. What if Jaden Daniels is the number one pick? That's still a possibility. But like I said, they could have let the first round play out and gotten some bids. They could have waited until after the draft, listened to some offers. They could let the season play out, and then Fields his free agency, and the Bears get a comp pick. I just saw all these options, and I go, they wanted to make sure Caleb was good, and I think they were looking out for Justin, too, just to get him out of there. That's the only question I have with this whole situation. I look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and go, you guys did it. I think they're having, if not the best, one of the best off seasons, especially coming off of what they did last year, still getting into the playoffs with Kenny Pickett and winning 10 ball games. How much is Russell Wilson or Justin Fields going to elevate them? I'm praying that Russell Wilson goes over there and he does his thing. And I think he'll have more weapons around him. I think the personality of the team fits him most. But yeah, I look at the Bears and I go, you guys just wanted to get this thing done and over with because you could have gotten more out of Justin Fields. It's crazy how we looked at Fields at the beginning of this whole situation. Oh, second round pick. Mm-hmm. Maybe throw another pick in there to a sixth round pick and possibly a fourth round pick if he plays 51% of the snaps. It's crazy.
I
wouldn't say he got devalued, but
bargain bin.
Yeah, he was in that bargain bin.
Only related to the division. I don't want to take away from anything the Ravens did. I mean, for goodness sake, Seattle could only put up 3 points against him. It was a god awful, just like beating of this team. That being said, it is going to be interesting to see what the Ravens do if the Steelers manage to kind of get right a little bit. Joe Burrow is going to come back healthier because, I mean, again, it's not like they weren't dominant, but the Bengals didn't have Joe, were really bad when they had him, like really uneven. The Steelers had no one at quarterback. Like it was kind of a weak division when we thought it would be really strong.
AFC North next year, best division.
That's
in football.
What I'm saying. They could have the biggest turnaround of any division. Interesting stuff for the Ravens. Second down. What do you like about the Hawks signing Baker and Dotson?
One, I just like that they signed some linebackers. Thank you, sweet baby Jesus. But I also like they only sign these guys to one-year deals. Because you look at Dotson, you look at Jerome Baker, they're solid ball players, right? Baker, 22 sacks in 6 seasons with Miami. But with this new coaching staff and this new era trying to find guys that fit your defense, I think this is the safe way to go and probably the best way to go. Let these guys come in here, play for a year, and just prove their worth, prove that they're willing to be here. Now, after talking to Jordan, he points out that this linebacker class ain't very good when it comes to these prospects coming out of college. So this buys you some time as well. I know people don't like to hear that. I also said that Geno and Sam Howell buys you some time. So does this situation, the Baker and Dotson. It buys you some time. It's such a brand new coaching staff. a new defense coming in, you don't want to rush to conclusions and rush to things and overcommit to guys that you're not completely sure about. They did enough on film to get them here, but now it's like, go out and prove it. And there's something about a one-year contract that makes guys just hungry and make you want to go out there. So now if you get here and these guys love the environment, they like what Mike McDonald is doing, they like what Dirty is doing, they're going to be more likely to stay here after that first year. I just like the crawl before you walk, take your time with these contracts type of approach.
Third down. The NFL draft is nothing but a gamble. With that being said, what's something that's true about the draft over the past 4 to 5 years?
You can get yourself a baller receiver. If you pick one of the top five receivers in a draft, most likely that guy's going to be a main contributor. In 2023, you got JSN, Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers, and Quentin Johnson kind of fell off, right? 2022, Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jameis Williams. 2021, Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Kadarius Toney, up and down, smiles and frowns. 2020 was a little rough. You got Ruggs, Jordan Henry, CeeDee Lamb, you got Rieger and Jefferson. And then in 19, you got N'Keal Henry, Marquise Brown, Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown. I'm just saying, Jordan has talked about how deep the receivers are. He said he had 12 day two type of guys on his board. If you are able to pick a top five, top six receiver, chances are that dude's going to be around to play for a while. So I love the depth at this position. When you do play the receiver position, because you can have a 6'5 guy all the way down to a 5'11 type of dude and everything in between, there's a spot for you. There's a spot for the fast guy who can barely catch. There's a spot for the average speed guy with routes. There's a spot for the slow guy who's quick in the slot. It's just deep. So if you need a receiver, this is the draft to do it. But history shows that if you can pick some of the top five receivers, you'll have a chance to have a receiver to play through a second contract.
I just had an idea for a much more interesting 11:45 than what we were already doing.
Okay.
I was going to get back to some sound, which is fine, but you guys can listen to that on the podcast anytime. What I want to do instead is talk about things in sports that used to be truth that just aren't anymore. Because I remember when the Seahawks got Amara Darbo, when they had, now David Moore was like a late round pick. But I remember the idea was, wide receivers take a minute to adjust, man. That learning curve is slow for receivers. That's not true. It's simply not true. Mm-hmm. So things that we used to think were NFL truths or sports truths that just simply are not. And what changed? I can't wait to talk about mobile quarterbacks here, too. Fourth down. Which NFL team's in dangerous waters when it comes to the quarterback situation?
Dangerous waters. We're going back to Denver.
Okay.
Where Dangerous used to be there, right? They're taking $85 million cap hit over the next couple of years because of Russell. And I'm looking at it. They're going to have to start Stidham unless they draft a quarterback late in the draft and they find themselves a Brock Purdy. They're looking at the number 12 pick. But they can miss an opportunity to draft one of those top quarterbacks at number 12. Why Minnesota has pick 11 and 23. Smells fishy. They're probably going to move up and try to get a QB. The Raiders have pick 13 and the second round pick of 44, third round pick of 77. They have Gardner Minshew over there. Something tells me they're not saying he's going to take us to a Super Bowl. You look at the Saints. They got pick number 14 in the second round, number 45, and third round, number 168. And then the Rams. Don't sleep on the Rams. I know they just drafted or signed Jimmy Garoppolo. Come on now. Jimmy ain't going to lead you to no Super Bowl. That window is closed. You still have Stafford. They might be looking to move up. They got picks number 19 and number 52. Is there a Brock Purdy out there for these guys? If not, if there is no Brock Purdy, we can see Stidham under center for these guys. They have to make some moves happen. Guys are going to be jockeying for that fourth or fifth quarterback off the board, maybe even the third quarterback. We shall see. But I look at the Broncos and I go, look, you took a big hit. You got the 12th pick, but the guys behind you are trying to move up. It's going to be interesting who's going to be the quarterback over there. And then how much patience does Sean Payton have with whoever they get over there? The Broncos, man, they just made the worst deal in football history. The biggest cap hit in football history. And sitting at 12, they are not safe when it comes to getting a quarterback.
Are we all just assuming Minnesota's going to swap with the Chargers at number 5 and take J.J. McCarthy?
I would think so.
I think that's like the popular opinion we're all working with right now, right? That they trade up to 5?
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what happens with Knicks and Michael Penix.
They'll be, I know.
You're going to have quarterback needy teams in the first round after J.J. McCarthy if he ends up going at 5.
Yeah.
I'm
looking across the league, and you're going to need somebody to fall off. Mm-hmm. But it happens every year. Quarterbacks fall off and things happen. But, yeah, it's rough being Penix or Bo Nix right now.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Everyone loves a good sports rant, right? We got a new one coming for you next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Everyone loves a good sports rant. I mean, one of them, I'm a man, I'm 40, inspires one of our segments, Get Off My Lawn, which you'll hear every single Wednesday at 10:45. I gotta say, though, I really like this one. Now, it's not chaotic. It's not crazy. There aren't a million quotable moments. I just think it's a really, really good point by Tom Crean. The ESPN analyst and former college basketball coach went off on schools who decide to skip the NIT.
There's no question about it. I would want to coach. I would want to develop my team. You've got bigger staffs than you've ever had. There's plenty of time for the portal. There's plenty of time to talk to recruits. There's plenty of time to negotiate NIL deals. There's not plenty of time to play. There's not plenty of time to get your players on the floor and give them a chance to get better. There's not plenty of time for guys to continue to play that may never get to play again. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. It's each coach's choice. I get it. But if you take away a chance to play the games, to put your team on the floor, let them opt out. All right, the bowl season has it all the time. Let it happen. Who cares? Give your players and coaches a chance to keep coaching and playing. Wow. And don't shortchange. If a guy doesn't want to play, go sit down. If a coach doesn't want to coach, go recruit. But there's got to be enough people to put 5, 6, 7 people on the floor and go play. Makes absolutely zero sense to me.
Dude, I'm not mad at this take at all. I think it's a good point.
No, it's a great point. I heard Stephen A. go against it. What do you mean? That's their choice. Stephen A., he ain't thinking about the players. Uh-huh. There is a fifth-year senior that will never touch a basketball court again unless he goes down to L.A. Fitness. Mm-hmm. There is a walk-on who's going to decide, this is too much for me. I just can't with my schedule and all this stuff.
There's a pair of best friends or family members
There's just scenarios that matter and that – We talk about how college sports is changing so much. That's something you can hold on to. Just playing and being and having that camaraderie and going to the arena, bouncing a ball, the warm-ups. I remember the smell of Martin Stadium, the smell of it. I remember where the sun is at 2 o'clock. I remember the smell of the locker room. I remember conversations and traditions I would have before walking on the field. Like, those things matter. And I think if you take that away from your players without even asking them about it, I think it's selfish. I think this is some coaches just saying, I'm done with this season. Our team isn't very good. I'm moving on. You're moving on, and you're probably going to coach somewhere, or maybe you pocketed enough money you can sit down and chill for a few years. All right, good for you. But there are dudes on this team that won't play again, and that's who I think about when these guys decide not to play. And, of course, the Cougs, us being NIT connoisseurs, right? I got to see them play all the time in NIT, and I enjoyed it. So, again, it's up to the coaches, but I'm with Coach here, man. You play those games.
Yeah, if you wanted to be in the tourney, then have a better season. But also, if you're not in the tourney and you're in NIT, then that's okay, too. It's still a chance to play together and a chance to win. It feels like a perfect opportunity to be competitive. Why not seize it? There's criticism, of course, because I think some people would say, well, if people don't want to play, they don't want to play. But again, like Tom said, it's a coach's decision, and the argument is that most coaches are doing it because that's when the transfer portal opens and they want to get to work on building that next year's team. Okay, but your season isn't really over yet. I mean, you're choosing to end it.
So adjust. You know when the portal starts, grab your coaches, put them on the road. There are ways around this. Set up some Zooms. There are ways around this, man. I just feel for the guy who won't play again.
I agree. Next story here, a malfunction at the Atlantic 10s tournament caused the streamers for Duquesne University to drop. With 18 minutes left in the game.
They got Hillstone. Gives off to Jackson. My goodness. Oh, my gosh. They got confetti falling right now. Confetti is falling on the floor. They're going to have to stop playing. We can't see our notes. The players can't work on this court. Confetti is everywhere. Somebody hit the wrong button.
Oh. Just imagining being the guy that was like, this button right here, no! Slow motion confetti falls. Now, thankfully, Duquesne actually won the tournament and clinched their first tourney bid since 1977. Congratulations to them. It was, the streamers were released early, but still needed.
They're still needed. Who's the guy what are his qualifications, and what's the punishment for accidentally pushing that button, man? I feel bad for whoever that was. He's sitting there watching it go down. His mom, his dad, his kids are watching it. That's dad. That's mom. They're not supposed to do that right now. It's so much deeper than you guys really understand. That's someone's job.
I know.
And he's embarrassed right now.
His confetti cannon detonator.
Exactly.
Is that one of the most high-pressure jobs in sports? Because if you get it wrong like this guy, they got to pause the game. They got to sweep everything up. And then, like, let's say, I remember, God, it was the NCAA, it was the national championship game, I think, in 2017 when Villanova hit that game winner. And the confetti cannon guy blasted the cannons off as the shot, like, went in. But it was like, did he get it off in time? If he hadn't got it off in time, then you got to sweep everything up. Everything's back. Like, low-key, high-pressure job.
What's the worst you guys have messed up at a job before?
At a job? Probably here, honestly. Thankfully, it was pre-recorded. You weren't here that day. Me and Curtis were doing the interview. And
Curtis is already laughing.
I looked up. I forgot we were interviewing.
Somebody retweeted a link that it wasn't one of their own articles.
He let me tell the story. I'm the one who did it. Anyway.
What happened?
He retweeted a link to a story, and I didn't see the retweet. I read the story and go, oh, it's a good story. And I asked him about it. He goes, oh, that wasn't me. There I go. Thankfully, this is pre-recorded. Let's start all over.
No. Curtis, Matt, do you have one? Matt, I know you got some buttons on that board.
I don't have one. I have a million.
I know, but you have one that you're probably not supposed to press that you've pressed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there have been plenty of times, like, it's a Mariners game. Yep. It's 11 innings. Late at night. You have no idea what you're doing anymore.
And then you end the game.
Yeah. So
look, one time.
There's a button on the board, and I'm guilty of pressing this too, where when you are running a Mariners game, all the affiliate stations from across the Northwest have to connect to us. So there's like, 50 affiliates all over the place. And if you press this button, it disconnects with all those stations. So you're not just taking like one station off the air. You're taking like 50 stations off the air. And I accidentally pressed that during a pregame show.
And you can't blame it on anyone else, because it's not like a full room of people where you could look around going, who said that? Like, who did that? What's going on? They walk in and it's just you in front of this board with a bag of Doritos going, I don't know who did that.
Here's my question for y'all. Do you just stare at the button that you have to push like for 10 seconds before you actually push it? Or are you just so comfortable back there?
It becomes muscle memory, but when you are getting the hang of it, yeah, you got to really focus.
It's probably like hitting the gas when you mean to hit the brakes or vice versa. Like doing something where you're like, I'm not thinking about it, but just that one time, that's all it takes to ram into your garage door, you know? I've done that.
You've done that?
I've done that. Not ramming into my garage door, but I was at an intersection and I was pulling up behind someone. I wasn't paying attention. And I looked up and I meant to slam on my brakes and I slammed on the gas. And instead of like pulling up behind them and like stopping just in time, I slowly pulled up behind them and then sped up. It was so embarrassing. Next and last story in the timeline. Kate Middleton's found her way into the sports world. MLS announcer Joey Zanaboni made reference to Kate Middleton's infamous Mother's Day Photoshop fail. Allegedly it was her, during a goal call over the weekend.
This is Delgado playing one over the top, skips to the end line from the corner, paints Hill, Sanchez, oh! Roman Berkey! Stones Jovalic! Paddles one away! Oh, Roman Berkey! Altering that shot like it's a Kate Middleton Mother's Day photo.
That's a great call.
That's a bar. Dang.
That's a great call, but I also will stand by the idea that there is no planet that exists where Kate Middleton was hunched over a laptop editing that in an Adobe software platform.
She didn't do it. Somebody else did it.
There's no way that she edited that photo. And then they made her take the blame for it. She probably didn't even tweet that out. I'm convinced. I'm going to stop.
She wasn't wearing a ring either, right?
No, but the British royal family is kind of weird. Like, William doesn't wear a ring. Maybe she just wasn't wearing one in that photo. It seems like a very bad oversight when
there's rumors of a rift.
Me?
It sounds like you're in on it.
No, I'm in on it, and then I'm trying to get to the bottom of it, and that's all I want to talk about all the time, but unfortunately I can't because we're talking sports. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Truth is subjective when it comes to NFL trends, and there's a few truths we've learned that we're wrong about. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Truth is kind of subjective when it comes to NFL trends. There are lots of things that we used to all think were collective truths in the NFL that actually aren't. And sometimes I think we just kind of jump on trends and assume that we know things, and then we realize that stuff changes over time. So here's what I mean. There used to be this assumption that wide receivers have a really slow learning curve to the NFL. Bump, why did that assumption kind of exist in the first place? Is it like playbook stuff? Is it hash marks? Is it, I don't even know.
I think it's all the above, right? You can be coming from a different offense. You have to learn a new playbook. Chemistry with your quarterback, understanding the speed of the game. In college, you can just dominate, and now you get into the league and guys are faster. I remember my first practice in the slot. There's an outside backer that's matched up on me. I'm like, I'm about to cook, and he's right on my hip. I'm like, all right, they're a little better here. So I think the speed of the game, chemistry with the quarterback, and just getting those reps. But now, the reason why receivers are ready to go is because of 7-on-7. These kids play 7-on-7 from, I mean, I own a facility, Elite Training Academy, holla at me, and we got 8 7-on-7 teams. I have a third and fourth grade team all the way up through high school, and I'm watching the way these kids move and the way we train them, and they're so much further ahead than I was at that age. So I think them getting those reps, controlling their body, and just understanding the game better. Now they got, I mean, Madden, when I was growing up, it had the plays or whatnot, but I don't know, Curtis Taylor, are you guys old enough to remember when Madden just had the box in the corner of your receiver? You couldn't see the full field?
Yes.
Yeah, right now, these kids are seeing the full field in Madden, and I'm watching the coverages and the way they move, and I go, this is legit. Like, my son can identify every coverage, a blitz, all these stunts, because of the resources. So receivers are just, they're bigger, faster, stronger, and they get way more reps than we used to get.
Why didn't you ask Stacy if she remembered that about Madden?
Something tells me, Curtis, she's...
I played a lot of snowboard kids.
Oh.
The last video game console I played was an N64. I played The Sims, build lots of houses.
Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah. It's interesting. We're not going to get back to four down territory, but you looked at the last like 4 to 5 years and you were like, one truth about the NFL is like those early round wide receivers, not every single time, but like there are so many wide receivers plucked out of the first round, dropped onto their team, ready to play, and they become stars.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's fun to watch because you can count on a rookie being a number one receiver now, and it's crazy.
What's something else you think that like used to just be like, we used to talk about it one way, or it used to be a truth, and times have changed in the NFL?
Well, you and I were talking about this off air. You brought it up, so I can't take credit for it, but I agree 100%. Mobile quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. You used to see a mobile quarterback and think, oh, man, he's just not on time. That's not going to work in the league.
Backyard football.
Backyard football. What is he doing? When now you have to be able to move as a quarterback. You don't have to be Lamar Jackson. You don't have to be Mike Vick or any of these extremely mobile quarterbacks, but you got to be able to move. Sam Howell can move a bit. Geno can move a little bit. So now they're looking for that. It's always weird because you have these rules that people think and these ideas, and as soon as it's challenged, people think, oh, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't work. Even when it comes to just football in general, the way that it's played, a bunch of the college game is now in the NFL. So, the mobile quarterback was a thing, man. And big ups to Randall Cunningham, who kind of started this thing. Throw Steve Young in the mix, too. Mike Vick. People thought it couldn't be done in that fashion. They thought you had to operate from the pocket.
It's almost like every other player on the field, with the exception of the quarterback, could be an athlete. And once you were an athlete, you got points docked from football IQ. Mm-hmm. Like, that was this really lazy assumption about, like, well, if you're an athlete, you must not have it all between the ears, because clearly you aren't finding these open targets, so you're having to scramble around. And how long until you can't lean on that athleticism? Like, this was a way that we collectively, we, Royal We, talked about football 10 years ago. I mean, I remember when Russell Wilson was coming into the league, the idea was, well, what if he can't run forever? And Russell Wilson, who was a very different quarterback from RG3, a very different quarterback from Colin Kaepernick, were all compared to each other, even though I would say RG3 is mobile in a very different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And big ups to my guy, Kieran. He also mentions McNabb.
Yeah.
Another thing, short quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Before Russell and Kyler, the only one I can think of was Doug Flutie. And it was even fun watching him play because it just didn't seem like he'd be able to get it done. He just did it in a different way. Nowadays, I mean, I don't think people are going out and looking for quarterbacks under 6 feet, mm-hmm. but they're also going to give them an opportunity now.
Yeah, I think just the value of, like, Brock Osweiler, what is he, 6'5" or whatever, not mobile at all.
Like, he's like 6'8".
You see a guy like that, and it used to be like, oh, prime. Get mm-hmm. that guy. He's going to be able to see over the line. He's going to be able to see everything. He's going to be a crane on the field. And then you get him out there, Texans, after giving him a bunch of money, and it doesn't work out
right.
because you find out that it is much more valuable to be dynamic.
Yeah.
And that is these quarterbacks that we've been seeing. Like, I mean, maybe Joe Burrow is the last guy I can think of that people thought like, oh, more traditional pocket passer. Even guys that are pocket passers now can run around and can yeah. scramble and can do things.
Joe can move.
That's
Joe
what I'm saying. Like, people look at, Patrick Mahomes isn't especially mobile. He's evasive.
And he's a little scooter.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of a mall walk going on.
Oh, running backs. Mm-hmm. Running backs do way more now than 10 years ago. As a running back, you weren't asked to catch the football the way they're asked to catch the football now. It used to be, okay, run this swing left, swing right type deal. Now it's like, nah, we're going to motion you out. That safety's going to roll down or you're going to be on the outside back. Now you have to run a route, get open, and catch the football. I remember growing up, I used to hate seeing a running back line motion out and line up all the way as a number one receiver. I'm like, not throwing him the ball, man. He ain't got that. But now you got these running backs who can do it all. I love it.
I also am going to tie running backs into the way that offenses incorporate the run to make themselves especially dynamic and versatile and hard to beat. I remember this idea of Pete Carroll's old school. He wants to run the rock too much. And there is this kind of hit your head against the wall, no pun intended, aspect if you're kind of running the same way and it's not creative and it's just, or you don't have the guys to be like this power run team and you're trying to do it. But you look at what Kyle Shanahan's been able to do in really innovative ways with, because he has a fullback that can catch the ball too out of the backfield, because he's got obviously one of the best running back in the game right now, arguably, if Derrick Henry isn't healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that those pieces have allowed him to create an incredibly innovative, creative offense when the entire assumption was, oh, if you run the ball, it's old school.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, wait a minute. Now we're talking about like outside zone and like wide zone and all these things that people are doing in these really creative ways.
How about going off of that, young head coaches and offensive and defensive coordinators? When I was coming up, if you didn't wear glasses, had some grays in your beard or your hair, bald, you were not going to be considered to be a leader of organization. That has changed.
Some weird things coming out of Pittsburgh. That's coming up at 12:30 when we take a look around the NFL. Before we get to it, Cougs head coach Kyle Smith joins us next. Don't go anywhere.